I'm Catherine Rollwagen, Professor of History at Vancouver Island University. Welcome to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. We introduce you to the people and passions of the Faculty of Arts and Humanities at VIU and share stories about the projects and events happening on campus. Since 2009, the Faculty of Arts and Humanities has been presenting The Colloquium, a series of lectures that brings our faculty's practices and research to the public. Our next presentation will be on Friday, November 29th, when Hans Verhoeven from VIU's Music Department presents Get Into the Groove, Biomusical Beats, and Neboja Zivkovic's Trio Per Uno. Today, Dr. Theo Finnegan sits down with Hans to talk about what it's like to practice and teach percussion.
Hi, Hans.
Hi.
Thanks for speaking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to go back to the very beginning. How did you get into playing music initially? Was it something you were always drawn to? Did you grow up in a musical household? How did you get started in music?
Yeah, I grew up in a musical household. My mom is a French and music teacher, and my dad played drums, and he played drums when he was in high school, and then he gave them up for a very long time, and then he got a set of drums again, and I started sort of just playing around the house a little bit. And I was playing baritone horn in my mom's band class, and then one night we had a school concert, and the snare drummer didn't show up, and my mom was like, oh, get back there, and there was no music. And I was like, what do I do? And she goes, just make it up. And I did. And people loved it. And I had a great time. So I've been like making it up since then. Like my very first performance was improvised snare drumming. And,
wow.
And I enjoyed that immensely. So I kind of kicked my dad off the drums for a while there. I mean, he's back on now. He's playing all the time since he's been retired. But yeah, I grew up in a musical household for sure.
If you had to say, what is it about drums that kind of draws you to them?
I don't know if I could articulate it, but that's why I play the drums. I'm able to articulate things with the drums that I'm not able to with talking.
So drumming as a kind of language.
Yeah, it's just a very immediate, raw, visceral, subtle, complex, expressive way of communicating how I feel or how I think at any given time. It just feels like a need. It's kind of always felt like I just needed to make percussive sounds.
I teach in the English department here, and I'm always kind of struggling with the way that it turns something that is an interest for me into a job.
Ah.
So reading stuff for pleasure, you'd think would go hand in hand, but it often doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So can you speak a little bit from your perspective about whether it's a challenge to balance being a drummer with being a teacher of music?
Mm-hmm. That's a he just opened up a huge can of worms. I think that has more to do with the fact that in our society, in our Euro-American society, we treat education as a business, and people are paying money, so they have expectations, and people are being paid money. So there are a lot of expectations. There are a lot of expectations for deliverables and guarantees and the like. I really try not to think about that or focus on that. I try to essentially fulfill my responsibilities within that sort of paradigm. But then I try to sort of subvert that sort of capitalist mindset by connecting with the what makes music so powerful. And it's a balancing act, and it's extremely challenging for sure. And I don't think I do a very good job of it, to be honest, most of the time, because sometimes these things feel like they are at odds with each other. But I think there is a way for art and business to coexist. I've learned so much about music and drumming since I started being a teacher. I learn a ton from my students, and I do get pushed to go places that maybe I wouldn't go on my own. Yeah, of course, it's extremely gratifying and fulfilling to see someone, you know, catch fire and go places that you didn't expect or you couldn't have imagined. I mean, ultimately, I'd be extremely happy if my students were playing stuff that I never could have imagined myself. And I sincerely hope that they all go out and really share their own unique voices, you know, as musicians with the world. That would be ideal. But even if they don't, it's good. It's good for them. It's good for me.
How did you come to the sort of academic side of music? What's your sort of background in terms of your where you studied and?
Well, I came to it slowly. Like, I was sort of self-taught in many ways. I grew up on Kootenay Lake on the East Shore, which is really rural. So I didn't have immediate access to a lot of performances and performers and teachers and so on. But yeah, the first place I studied was at Humber College right out of high school. So I went from a graduating class of 13 people to Toronto, and that was culture shock. And I was kind of like, why is everyone so mean all the time? but I was in a great group of people. I was playing with Brandy Distraft and Lila Bialy and a whole big crew of really great folks who are still doing music all the time out at Humber. But I didn't like Toronto too much, so I came back to the island after 2 years and took a little while to sort of get myself together. And then I played a gig with PJ Perry, and he said, you should be in a big city. You should go and get your degree. So I applied and I got into McGill in Montreal. I did 4 years there, studied with some great people. Chris McCann was my main teacher, and he's a national treasure. And then I came back here eventually, and then I did my master's at UVic with Bill Linwood, who's also a phenomenal teacher and player. So, yeah.
You mentioned a couple of times there the idea of a sort of big city as a place to learn music. Do you think, and obviously we're not in a big city here, we're in a small city. Do you think... I guess that there's something really necessary or something great about studying and you know, I'm thinking of Montreal as a big jazz city, for instance. You know, lots of players, lots of esteemed players.
Yeah.
People must really benefit from that kind of environment. Is there a challenge in a place like Nanaimo? Obviously, you can't compete with that sort of critical mass. But what is it about somewhere like VIU or Nanaimo that maybe has its own special thing that is that can compete with that kind of urbanity or you know, big city flavor?
I basically refuse to believe that just because you're in like a smaller more rural area you can't be producing and experiencing art of a caliber that you would get in a cosmopolitan metropolis, let's say, like New York or Toronto or whatever. However, there's the critical mass, there's the diversity, and there's the multiculturalism that you get in a big city, which I really wish we had more multiculturalism here in Nanaimo. But, you know, it's getting better for sure. So there's all that, and there's always so much going on in a big urban center. And but at the same time, it can kind of be like overload. You've got so many people sharing their opinions with you, and you've got so many different sort of competing schools of thought that it's sometimes hard. It's easy to lose your way, I suppose. I think in Nanaimo, well, I know for a fact that, you know, from a jazz perspective, there is actually like, and a unique scene here in the city, going back to people like Pat Coleman and John Forrest and Myron Makepeace and Brian Stovall and Ingrid Jensen and Christine Jensen and Carmela Luvisono and these kinds of people. Diana Krall, of course, as well. It seems to me that in Nanaimo, one is able to present oneself on one's own terms, and that's accepted. The people here, the musicians here, have like this innate humility and groundedness, so they don't get caught up in the hype and the sleek shininess that is pervasive in the bigger cities, because you sort of have to have that to compete. And I've always found that to be really grounding. It allows me to sort of maintain a sense of perspective, and there's a slower pace and a slightly easier quality of life. It's not as stressful, and I find I'm able to better hear my intuitive self.
Right.
And I think as an artist, or someone who's trying to become an artist and live up to a sort of global standard of excellence, you need to be able to be in touch with your intuitive self to make sure that you stay on the right track with your development. Because otherwise you just get lost down the rabbit hole.
I was thinking as you were talking about like the idea of sort of trying to keep up with the Joneses almost in a sort of big city setting where there's lots of trends and everything's happening really quickly and a lot of sort of I mean, again, not to stereotype it, but sort of a sense of superficiality maybe in some of your interactions with people.
Sometimes,
You know, you were saying a bit before that you sort of, why is everyone so mean here? And a place that sort of doesn't have that sense of maybe competitiveness in a bad sense might enable you to be a bit freer about who you are, I suppose, as a musician.
Yeah, there's a whole suite of extracurricular, if you will, things that need to happen to become good at what you do, whatever that is. And so as a musician, you need to have access to nature, which we have. You need to have time and space to just think and do other things, be physically active. You need to have time and space to just kind of do nothing. And what I've found in the big urban centers is the hustle is just all consuming. It doesn't leave much time for just kind of doing nothing and letting things percolate on at their own speed, on their own terms, as I sort of was saying. So because I have more time out here, I'm able to develop sort of my own maybe ideas, like my own kind of unique style expression maybe. I feel like it's coming anyways, and I'm having an easier time doing that here than I did in Toronto, certainly.
Is part of that the fact that it's sort of harder to stand out in somewhere like Toronto, that there's so many people playing drums or playing jazz, or whereas in this, like you're saying, there is this lineage here, there's a critical mass here in Nanaimo of people playing, but it's maybe not quite as overpopulated.
I never found that it was hard to stand out in Toronto or Montreal. Kind of the opposite, actually. Like the power of the trends, at times I sort of felt like ostracized because I was just trying to do my own thing, and it was not, didn't really fit in very well with the current trend at the time. You know, it's since changed, of course, as these things do. But I think as a young impressionable person who's in this act of searching, you know, you don't know what it is until you find it. You need to be given the leeway to mess around a little bit and not have the pressure of like you need to conform to this trend because this is the most popular thing right now. So yeah, it was more that for me. I miss being able to go and see so many fantastic drummers and musicians living in Nanaimo. I wish there were more. I would welcome more people coming here for sure.
I lived in Edmonton for 12 years, and like literally outside my spare room window, I could see the Yardbird Suite, which is a pretty cool club.
Yep.
Quite old jazz club, I think, in Edmonton too. Mm-hmm. And I could walk there in 2 minutes, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah. I miss that for sure.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Catherine, and I teach in the history department at Vancouver Island University. You're listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities on CHLY 101.7 FM, Nanaimo.
Talked about physical activity and you know, being able to get out in nature. How important is being fit as a drummer, being, you know, having a fit body? But also I'm curious about what you said about nature being important for a musician, also given that one of the things you're going to talk about is biomusicology, which I'm not at all familiar with, which obviously the bios connects with nature. What is that connection for you?
You know, I'm surrounded by sound and notes just falling out of my ears all day long can be overwhelming. And as I say, like, I lose that connection to the intuitive self. So being out in a quieter world away from people allows me to hear, you know, wind and waves and birds and that sort of thing. And I can get down to the nitty gritty, down to the important stuff, down to my own stuff, I suppose. Yeah. So it presents a chance for me to be very selfish. Just focus on myself.
What is biomusicology, if I could?
The field of biomusicology is not something that I'm very familiar with. I presume it's the study of music and living things.
Yeah. What is entrainment then?
So entrainment is organisms aligning themselves in some sort of physical way to a perceived external rhythm. So, you know, that could be like when you think about work songs, people working in a field together and lining up if they're digging, or if they're, you know, breaking up the dirt with tools or something like that. Also blacksmiths back in the day, blacksmiths used to, they'd have three or four people hammering the same piece of metal. And so obviously they would have to coordinate their striking of the metal so they don't break each other's hands.
Yeah.
So it would be done in a rhythm, right?
So clank, you'd get
clank,
a sort
clank,
of
clank, 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 clank.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of YouTube videos with all this kind of thing, but I mean, I think it goes beyond that. Like I was, you know, if I don't get to get out in nature, I'll watch it on Netflix, ironically. and so I love David Attenborough and Planet Earth. And I was watching this one, documentary about these macaques in Thailand who they live in the intertidal zone. They'll swim for their food sometimes, but as the tide goes out, more and more food resources are exposed. And right when the tide's out at its lowest, there are, I believe, they're urchins that are still underwater, but they get exposed when the waves recede, and then they get covered up when the waves come back. So these macaques hang out at a dry spot, and they align themselves with the external rhythm of the waves going in and out.
Wow.
And then when the waves go out, they jump down and grab as many urchins as they can,
wow,
and then they run back so they don't get swept out to sea. So even something like, and I mean, when I was watching that and thinking about, you know, humans spreading out of Africa and wandering around the world and following the coastline, it just seemed to me like, well, that's us. Like there's a very good example of evolution of perception, you know, astute observation of what's going on around you and noticing, oh, there's a pattern here, there's a regular pattern, and I can exploit that, you know, to get some more brain food kind of thing. So those are just a couple examples.
It's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
What's, for you, the importance of the colloquium series, given that it is academic and public at the same time? It's for at least two different audiences, if not more. Like, why is that an important thing in your sort of practice and in your life?
Right. Well, I find that people have a lot of assumptions about musicians and drummers, but maybe not a lot of awareness about what we actually do. Like, every time I meet someone, I would say, oh, I'm a musician. They go, oh, are you in a band? And, you know, like, that doesn't really exist. Like, it's no one's in a band anymore. Unless you're very, very lucky and you really love being in a band, because the schedule is grueling and you're always with the same people constantly. So I'm a freelance musician. I have, like, four or five different jobs as a musician. And further to that, people don't know anything about sort of what we do. And I really want to just connect with, like, regular people who don't know anything about music, and hopefully get them excited and interested and maybe even inspired about how amazing music is. I just want to connect with people, regular people, and share just some of the things that we do in a way that hopefully relates to their lives. I mean, this concept of entrainment, I think, you know, people are doing it all the time as we, like, you know, a four-way stop, for instance, a busy four-way stop. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, there's a perceived external rhythm there. Like, everyone has to keep track. And if they don't, you know, problems arise, right? I think sometimes that music is maybe not as present as it should be in our culture. Like, it's quite something when you see how difficult it can be to get people to dance or to sing, just regular people.
Yeah.
They go, oh, I'm not a singer, I'm not a trained singer, I'm not a trained dancer, you know, and people are very reluctant to do it. So if we can start to bridge that gap and make some more connections so that people feel more welcome and more included, That's a good thing for sure.
I've always thought I'm a really bad singer. I mean, I love music and I play guitar, but I've always been really shy about singing. But when I had my kid, my baby, in February, I started singing to her, and I'll just do it anywhere. Like, I'll be in public, like, not super loud or whatever, but, like, I don't care anymore. And it's a really kind of freeing feeling to just be like, I'm just going to sing something for her and not be too self-conscious about how good it is or...
Yeah.
It's
liberating, right?
Liberating, yeah.
So yeah, I think if we can maybe help people feel like a bit more liberated, maybe a bit better about music in their own lives, then that's a very positive thing, and that's a very powerful thing. And I think people don't quite realize how good music can make you feel if you just kind of let go and don't really care so much about what other people think of you.
You've been listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. Thanks to Theo Finnegan and Hans Verhoeven for their conversation. Technical production by Robin Davies. The Colloquium series will be back in the new year with three engaging presentations to brighten your winter days in January, February, and March. Stay tuned for more conversations with the presenters. To find out more information about our spring 2020 lineup, visit our website by going to ah.viu.ca and clicking Colloquium series. I'm Catherine Wolwagen. Thanks for listening.